Good morning and welcome to Catholic Views. I'm Jerry Klein. Thanks for joining us. Today on the program, we're going to talk with Chris Motes, who is the Executive Director of the South Dakota Catholic Conference. We're going to talk about Religious Freedom Week, which is coming up. We're going to talk about the Red Mass, which is also coming up and a part of that week. So I hope you'll stick around to hear that conversation with Chris. Jean Young will have news for us in just a bit. First, the readings for this Sunday. Emily Leadham with the first and second reading, and Deacon Bill Radio with the Gospel.
A reading from the book of the prophet Ezekiel. Thus says the Lord God, I too will take from the crest of the cedar, from its topmost branches, tear off a tender shoot, and plant it on a high and lofty mountain. On the mountain heights of Israel I will plant it. It shall put forth branches and bear fruit and become a majestic cedar. Birds of every kind shall dwell within it, every winged thing in the shade of its boughs. And all the trees of the field shall know that I, the Lord, bring low the high tree, lift high the lowly tree, wither up the green tree, and make the withered tree bloom. As I, the Lord, have spoken, so will I do. The word of the Lord. A reading from the second letter of St. Paul to the Corinthians. Brothers and sisters, we are always courageous, although we know that while we are at home in the body, we are away from the Lord, for we walk by faith, not by sight. Yet we are courageous, and we would rather leave the body and go home to the Lord. Therefore, we aspire to please Him, whether we are at home or away. For we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, so that each may receive recompense according to what he did in the body, whether good or evil. The word of the Lord.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Mark. Jesus said to the crowds, "This is how it is with the kingdom of God. It is as if a man were to scatter seed on the land and would sleep and rise night and day, and through it all the seed would sprout and grow. He knows not how. Of its own accord the land yields fruit, first the blade, then the ear, then the full grain in the ear. And when the grain is ripe, he wields the sickle at once, for the harvest has come." He said, "To what shall we compare the kingdom of God? Or what parable can we use for it? It is like a mustard seed, that when it is sown in the ground, is the smallest of all the seeds on the earth. But once it is sown, it springs up and becomes the largest of plants and puts forth large branches, so that the birds of the sky can dwell in its shade." With many such parables, he spoke the word to them as they were able to understand it. Without parables, he did not speak to them, but to his own disciples, he explained everything in private. The Gospel of the Lord.
And now with a look at news highlights from this past week from the Bishop's Bulletin, here's Gene Young.
Thanks, Jerry. In the news this morning, Catholic Radio in the Diocese of Sioux Falls is now being operated by Real Presence Radio, a lay apostolate based in North Dakota. RPR is working with Lamb Catholic Radio in an affiliate agreement. Real Presence Radio has also entered into a purchase agreement to acquire the 94.5 FM signal in the Sioux Falls area, which will provide a substantially increased coverage area and consistent signals. The purchase is contingent on a review by federal regulators. RPR, like Lamb Radio, is EWTN-affiliated. RPR's leadership has committed to including locally produced programs. RPR currently operates in the Diocese of Rapid City as well as across other sister dioceses in North Dakota and Minnesota. You can read and see more about Catholic Radio in the diocese in the June edition of the Bishop's Bulletin in homes across the diocese right now and online at www.sfcatholic.org. In other news, a woman's religious order and a group of women of all faiths are taking a stance against the Trump administration's policy of separating families by taking children into custody and sending parents to detention centers at the U.S.-Mexico border. The Adrian Dominican Sisters, based in Adrian, Michigan, call for an immediate end to the morally reprehensible practice in a statement this week. The sister said the policy of children being taken into government custody while their parents are sent away from them with no way of communicating and no way of knowing when they will be reunited indicates the nation has lost its moral compass. They are calling on Congress to enact long overdue immigration reform that enjoys broad public support and reflects American values. More than 1,200 women of all faiths have signed a letter to the U.S. Secretary of Homeland Security, Kirstjen Nielsen, which also calls for an immediate end to the practice of separating families. The letter states that many of these families seek to apply for asylum. By international law, these families should receive a fair hearing, not immediately be judged as criminals. Cautioning against complacency and carrying out the requirements of the Charter for the Protection of Children and Young People, the chairman of the National Review Board urged the country's bishops to never waver in their commitment to protect minors and vulnerable adults from sexual abuse. Francisco Cesario said in a report during the Spring General Assembly of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops this week that auditors preparing the 15th annual report on the implementation of the Charter found signs of complacency in carrying out the Charter in some dioceses and eparchies. Released June 1st, the report detailed audits of compliance with the Charter in U.S. dioceses and eparchies conducted between July 1st, 2016 and June 30th, 2017. While progress is being made as the number of allegations during the period declined from the two previous years, he cautioned the bishops to remain vigilant. Despite the progress we have made in the church and the ongoing efforts of dioceses, many among the faithful and in society at large question the commitment of the church, and in particular the bishops, in addressing the sexual abuse of children, he told the assembly. In a related item, the U.S. bishops this week decried U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions' decision that asylum seekers fleeing domestic or gang violence cannot find protection in the United States. At its core, asylum is an instrument to preserve the right to life, the bishop's statement said. They urged the nation's policymakers and courts to respect and enhance, not erode, the potential of our asylum system to preserve and protect the right to life. Sessions' decision elicits deep concern because it potentially strips asylum from many women who lack adequate protection, it said. These vulnerable women will now face return to extreme dangers of domestic violence in their home country. The statement from the bishops came on the first day of their meeting this week, their spring assembly in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Just after opening prayers, Cardinal Daniel Endonardo of Galveston, Houston, president of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, read the statement from the dais, and the bishops voiced their support. Announced by Attorney General Sessions at a news conference this week, the decision negates decades of precedents that have provided protection to women fleeing domestic violence, it said. Unless overturned, the decision will erode the capacity of asylum to save lives, particularly in cases that involve asylum seekers who are persecuted by private actors. Earlier this year, Andres Manuel López Obrador, best known for promising to bring down Mexico's mafia of power, stood solemnly at a lectern talking about religion. The time has come to present a proposal based on the aim that when we obtain the presidency, we must not only seek to achieve material well-being, we must also seek well-being for the soul, said the veteran leftist and runaway favorite to win the July 1st presidential election in Mexico. Just as we already have a political constitution, we are going to elaborate a moral constitution. Victory for the 64-year-old, often referred to as AMLO, would come after two previous unsuccessful attempts in the formation of an entirely new party, the National Regeneration Movement, or Morena, which revolves entirely around the candidate. With a look at the news from this past week, I'm Gene Young reporting from the Bishop's Bulletin Newsroom.
All right, Gene, thanks for the news.
Let's move on to our interview. This morning on Catholic Views, we are joined by Chris Motes, who directs the South Dakota Catholic Conference for the diocese, plural, of South Dakota, Rapid City and Sioux Falls. Chris, good to have you back.
Great to be here with you.
We want to talk a little bit about Religious Freedom Week, which is the successor to what we used to call the Fortnight for Freedom. I don't know if there's a lot in that name change, Chris, that we ought to explore, but it is a good opportunity to talk about all this.
Yeah, it lets us focus a little bit. It's a bit shorter time frame, and one of the nice things about the week is that it's bookended by the feast of some really great saints. June 22nd, the start of the week, we've got St. Thomas More and St. John Fisher, of course, two great champions for religious freedom in their own day. And then at the end of the week, June 29th, we've got Saints Peter and Paul, who, of course, were executed by the power of the state, by Emperor Nero, for living the faith to the full in their own day.
Yeah. I think it brings a little clarity. I think perhaps some people didn't quite get what Fortnight and Fortnight for Freedom really meant. When you use the term Religious Freedom Week, it's pretty clear.
Yeah, yeah, and we've, you know, there are lots of other issues and areas that are important to us that we try and highlight them within the span of a single week, that it puts a point on it in people's minds, I think.
Yeah, and it's not like we want to ignore it the other 51 weeks of the year, right?
No, no, of course not. you know, and that still, with the timing, with it kind of leading up to Independence Day for the 4th of July, it's still, you know, it's at an appropriate time of the year for us as Americans.
Absolutely. So they come up with a theme for this each year. This year, the theme is serving others in God's love. And again, I think that kind of helps us understand part of what we're trying to help people understand about who we are as Catholics and who we are as Americans.
Yeah, that's right. And for us as Catholics, you know, when we Eucharistic worship, Jesus changes us. He changes not just us interiorly, but also kind of how we act in the world, and he changes how we interact with others. One of those ways is service. Service is really one of the elements that's at the heart of how we're changed, which is, I think, why they chose serving others in God's love as the theme for this year.
And that's sometimes where the rub is, isn't it? It seems with our culture today, and even the government at times, they're not so comfortable with the service that we want to provide.
No, that's right. You know, a couple years ago with the HHS mandate and the contraceptive mandate, there were those that wanted to characterize our freedom as the freedom of worship. Okay, you get an hour on Sunday. Mm-hmm. But once you leave that church building, Okay, now you're on our terms again. And well, no, that's not it. It's every single day of the week, every hour of the day.
Yeah, because we talk a lot, don't we, about taking the faith into the world and faith beyond Sunday. I mean, there's a lot of terms that we have used through the years to help people, you know, to help us remember that ourselves, much less to convince others.
That's right. Yeah, it's if it's limited to just Sunday, it's incomplete.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't tell the whole story.
That's right.
It's certainly not what Jesus did.
No.
It's certainly not what Jesus calls us to do.
That's right. And so many of the good news stories that we have to tell about how we're serving society, you know, they're happening outside of the confines of the church building itself. Those are good news stories that we have to tell, and we've got to keep living them.
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to make sure we mention that in conjunction with this week, which is celebrated nationally, we're also doing one of the events we try to do annually, but we're doing it in connection with this week, the Red Mass.
Yeah, the Red Mass is traditionally a mass that is said for lawyers and statesmen, for politicians, for those that are concerned with lawmaking and the law. This year, it happens to coincide in the Diocese of Sioux Falls with this great week. So Bishop Swain is going to celebrate a Red Mass on the vigil of St. Thomas More and St. John Fisher. I think 5:30 p.m. on the 21st of June at our very beautiful Cathedral of St. Joseph.
And I know there have been invitations issued to the very people you just mentioned, but it's also open to anyone that would want to celebrate.
Come one, come all. You know, we're all Americans. This can be a great great celebration for everybody that has a heart for the good of their country.
There is a great tradition of the Red Mass, certainly around the country, and in our diocese, we've celebrated it many times. To be able to have this celebration, in a way, I really like that we tied it, that it's tied to this, because it makes the very point, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It makes it very clear that these things are connected.
Yeah, which is exactly what people need to understand. The USCCB, which kind of organizes this Religious Freedom Week, talks about providing opportunities to pray, reflect, and act. And again, I think that is a nice summary of who we are as Catholics, what we're called to do all year long, but particularly this week.
That's right.
Yeah, pray, reflect, act.
Yeah.
There's something in each one of those.
Yeah, beautiful synopsis. If we could each walk through, how am I being called to act today in my life, putting my gifts at the service of the common good?
We might try to give some particular examples, and I guess fortunately in South Dakota we haven't had a lot of particular rubs so far. We've done fairly well of avoiding some of that. But I know around the country there have been, particularly for those that deal with children, with child welfare, sometimes adoption, sometimes foster programs, we've run into conflict with the government. The government wants us to do things in a particular way that is in conflict with what we believe as Catholics.
That's right. You know, one example would be Catholic adoption agencies. City of Philadelphia, despite the Archdiocese of Philadelphia having an amazing reputation for just serving children and families in the area of foster care and adoption, the City of Philadelphia recently said, you can no longer participate in placing these children because of your beliefs, essentially, is what it came down to. Which is too bad. You know, it's a way in which we're able to serve oriented on the good of the other. You know, it's completely at the service of those who are most vulnerable.
And part of it is that as a culture, there isn't the understanding anymore, maybe of natural law and of some of the things that the church really believes and upholds. If you don't understand the backstory, if you will, if you don't understand why Catholics believe what they believe or how they got to this belief, then the belief doesn't make much sense, and people get confused about it.
They do, and that's why it gets portrayed very often as bigotry. You know, the issue in Philadelphia, as in many other parts of the country, has to do with homosexual unions, so-called same-sex marriages. We don't see it that way. That's not in accord with the truth of what marriage is. But the point, especially with adoption, is this isn't about this isn't about shaming people that are in those unions or calling them out. This is just about serving children in truth, and children have a right to a mom and a dad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Again, if we take a step back and understand, then part of what the church tries to teach becomes clearer for people. But how do we get there? I guess is the trick.
Yeah, I think as I just always have in my head the words of St. John Paul II, you know, we always propose, we never impose. So with respect for people's dignity and freedom, just the truth exists is starting point number one. It's compelling. It's attractive. We can live it with joy.
Mm-hmm.
And we just keep after it.
Yeah, truth, beauty, and goodness, right?
Right.
Those three pillars that so much of what we believe stands on. In South Dakota, as I mentioned so far, we're doing okay with this stuff. Is there anything on the horizon that concerns you that we ought to, particularly in this week, be thinking about?
Well, religious freedom can be in the forefront of our minds, even locally, just because it's been on the national docket for conversation in recent years. A couple years ago in South Dakota, our legislature had the foresight and wisdom to put into our statutory law protections for adoption agencies so that, for example, Catholic Family Services or Catholic Social Services on the other half of the state really can live their faith in how they're seeking to place adoptions. Not every state has a legislature that is as willing to just recognize the value that that religious faith has in society. You know, religious freedom, it's not just, sometimes we can think about it as something that's just for me. I mm-hmm. live it and it's good for me.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is that when we live it well, it's good for the common good.
Right.
Our country needs us to live it well. So there aren't any burning issues of conversation right now at this moment in time for South Dakota. But, you know, as we go through our political cycle, we're going to have a gubernatorial election, a House congressional election this fall. In the next legislative session, we ought to always be thinking about, you know, how does my vote, how does my voice impact the common good? You know, through my political participation, how can I serve? And there are some, you know, there are a lot of issues that we can think about and be involved in. Some of the ones that are just really at the core of the deepest, the avenues through which we find deep meaning and satisfaction in our life. We can think about the right to life, you know, that fundamental first step.
Mm-hmm.
We can think about religious freedom under attack in very many other places. We can think about the human family. We can think about our service to the poor and disenfranchised, those most vulnerable in our society. All issues that our faith compels us to consider.
And I don't know that most of us will get a chance to have direct conversation with some of the candidates. Sometimes we do. And I think we sometimes wonder, well, what questions should I be asking of them? How do I get at that to find out what those candidates are or what shapes their thought? How do I help them understand what I'm thinking?
Sure. You know, and one great way to just like a starting point would be, you know, okay, what way has the Lord gifted me in my life? What is important to me? Maybe you're an educator, and you've just got a real heart for education. That could be a springboard into a conversation with your legislator. You know, how do you view this issue? And mm-hmm. my experience has been these people are very willing to answer, to call you back if you leave them a message, or to answer emails. You catch them out in town. Lately, having just come through a primary season, seen plenty of them out knocking on doors, you know, trying to get their signs in the yard. When they knock on your door, don't be afraid to ask them, you know, what do you think about this? How did you vote if they're maybe up for re-election? How have you voted in the past on pro-life issues, for example, or whatever issue is really near and dear to your heart?
One of the things I do want to talk about just a little bit, Chris, is the recent Supreme Court decision regarding the cake baker. By now, most people have heard about this, but I'm not sure that they still quite understand the nuance. This is a pretty narrow decision, wasn't it?
It was a pretty narrow decision. There was a majority decision, and one of the things that justices can do is they can write, so if you don't agree, you can write a dissent. If you agree but want to explain your own rationale a little bit more, you can write what's called a concurrence. Mm-hmm. So there were a variety of concurrences that came out. The decision, the majority decision itself was 7-2, which, you know, we think about, oh, great, you know, that wasn't even a close call. But the legal reasoning they used was actually somewhat, you know, narrowly scripted to address a very a discrete legal issue. It wasn't quite as broad as some religious freedom advocates were hoping for.
And basically what they said, if I understand it, and I'm going to say it in my terms, so then you can correct me for people to help people understand this, is that the way that the baker was treated by the Colorado system was so hostile that they really didn't even get beyond that a person is entitled to be treated with respect as they present their concerns.
That's right. There's a state commission. He was alleged to have violated an anti-discrimination law for refusing to bake a particular sort of cake. And the commission, in dealing with Mr. Phillips, the cake baker, they were just so openly hostile to his religion. Mm-hmm. It made it relatively easy for the Supreme Court to say, well, at square one, as a first step, government cannot be openly hostile to religion.
Yeah.
Period.
Well, and even that actually is very good to hear. It's good to hear the court proclaim that.
That's
and
right.
It seems very obvious to us, but yet to hear the court proclaim it is a helpful thing.
That's right. And sometimes it gets lost in the nuance of, well, there's a difference between showing open hostility and offering an endorsement. You know, okay, our Constitution has said that Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. Government can't endorse a particular religion,
right?
But neither can it be hostile.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and again, the whole point is all parties deserve to be treated with dignity.
That's right.
Just what the church always teaches, right?
That's right, and that's actually in the church's Declaration on Religious Freedom. That's how it explains this duty of governments to refrain from coercing people. The reason the church says it's founded in human dignity.
Yeah.
We've got to respect people's dignity.
So I saw an interesting article recently, kind of right after the court made their decision. It was from one of the Little Sisters of the Poor, of course, who were deeply involved in the whole HHS mandate situation and were the parties involved in that. One of the sisters wrote an article, and she references, for students of history, they'll know what I'm talking about. She referenced the Know-Nothings, which go back in our country a long, long way. They were a political group who really were quite bigoted against anyone who wasn't of the right look, the right whatever, according to them. So is this something, Chris, that our country really kind of has, in spite of our desire for liberty and freedom and our proclamation of it, we've kind of fought this all through our history, haven't we?
Yeah, and it's a complex issue. Americans, we're not united by a common religion. We're not united by a common ethnicity or nationality in the sense that, well, a French person is someone from France. We're united by a common political creed. So we're coming, we really are a melting pot. We're coming from all different backgrounds and angles, and the clash of, it's been present throughout our history.
Yeah. It's classic, isn't it? This our strength is, but it always has a shadow side.
That's right.
There's always something there that that we struggle with and try to figure out how to get through it.
That's right. Yeah.
So my point in this is history can be our teacher.
That's right.
We can learn from this.
Yeah.
And have some hope.
That's right. And, you know, for Catholics coming out of that experience, there was a desire for many generations of Catholics to just express, no, we're truly and fully Americans. We're Catholic, but we're also fully Americans. Just a real longing to be embraced by our country and prove ourselves to a certain extent. And we can see the residual effects of that history in just the large number of Catholics that are involved in public service in one degree or another. You know, I can witness to that having served in the military, a large number of Catholics in the service of the country.
Yeah.
We have proven ourselves. And that's one of the things, too, for Catholics, that the witness of St. Thomas More and Bishop St. John Fisher give us is that love of or living our faith well, it deepens and purifies our love of country.
Mm-hmm.
If we're fully alive as Catholics, that makes us better Americans.
It's a great place to leave off, I think, today, and maybe an encouragement to people if they haven't read the story of John Fisher and Thomas More, if they haven't read it lately, it's worth it.
It is.
They're fantastic models for us in terms of what we're dealing with today.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, again, Religious Freedom Week is coming up. It's June 22nd to the 29th. Take some time and explore this a little bit. USCCB has some great stuff on their website. The Red Mass is coming up in our diocese. Lots of opportunities for people to engage.
Yep. Love to see everybody at the Red Mass.
All right. That's June 21st, 5:30 at the Cathedral of St. Joseph here in Sioux Falls. Chris Motes, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Well, Gene, this is Father's Day weekend.
Hard to believe that summer is already rolling along. We're not officially into summer yet until this week, but Father's Day is always the precursor, the Sunday before the start of summer.
And I appreciate Chris's conversation this morning talking about the event this week, the Red Mass. It's certainly something we invite everyone to come to.
Exactly. It is open to the public, and it does draw a good number of people, but the more the merrier.
Yeah. And a nice introduction, I think, to the Religious Freedom Week. Chris also referenced the saints that are kind of bookending this, John Fisher and Thomas More, and then Saints Peter and Paul at the end. What a great opportunity for us to kind of learn more about all of them.
Absolutely true. That's always a good thing. Learning is good.
And taking advantage of the opportunity. And then we're kind of ready when we get to July 4th, Independence Day.
It's coming soon.
All right. Well, that's our time for Catholic Views this morning. We'll be back with you next Sunday.